This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What is going on in Rakhine State against the Rohingya is despicable. They are horrible, terrible atrocities, and the world must hold Myanmar accountable for these actions.
That's Gambian Justice Minister Abubakar Tambadou on the suit filed by the West African country accusing Myanmar of carrying out genocide against ethnic Rohingya Muslims. Details coming up also. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed received the Nobel Peace Prize today. And experts warn that South Africa's state-owned enterprises are in trouble. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed received the Nobel Peace Prize today mainly for the peace deal he reached with Eritrea last year. Many observers hoped the deal would spark political reforms in Eritrea, where President Isaias Afwerki has ruled with a heavy hand for years. But as Martha van der Wolf reports from London, analysts and activists are increasingly skeptical the deal will stop Eritrea's government from oppressing its own citizens.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed was in Oslo Tuesday to accept the 2019 Nobel Peace Prize.
I accept this award on behalf of Ethiopians and Eritreans. Likewise, I accept this award on behalf of my partner and comrade in peace, President Isaias Afwerki, whose goodwill, trust, whose goodwill, trust and commitment were vital in ending the two-decade deadlock between our countries.
After 1998 to 2000 war that killed some 70,000 people, Eritrea and Ethiopia were stuck in a stalemate, unable to agree upon their border. When Abiy came to power in 2018, he quickly negotiated and signed a peace deal with Eritrea to strong international acclaim. Political analyst Goitom Gabriel says while there are some positive developments, there are two critical shortcomings when it comes to the results of the peace deal.
Firstly, it was expected by the international community and the Eritrean population at large, I believe, that it would initiate a process of political reform inside Eritrea, which it has failed to do. Secondly, the border between Ethiopia and Eritrea remains undemarcated, and the peace process for this reason remains incomplete. We can therefore say that rather than a transition from war to peace, what we have seen is a transition from one form of no war, no peace stalemate into another form of no war, no peace stalemate.
Human rights groups often criticize Eritrea's suppression of the media and political dissent, among other human rights abuses. The border conflict between the neighboring countries was used as a justification for Eritrean policies to enforce indefinite military service. Activist Vanessa Tsahai is associated with the Eritrean diaspora movement Yikal, meaning enough. She is disappointed that more than a year after the peace deal, the situation for ordinary people in Eritrea hasn't changed.
The only impact that this peace deal has had on Eritrea has been for the Eritrean leadership. So both financially, in terms of the opening up of business between the two countries, but also diplomatically, where Eritrea has now started being seen as this country that is in transition towards better days without any proof of development or any indication that this is actually going to happen.
Ethiopia is scheduled to hold national elections in May, the first since the previous government was ousted in 2018 after years of protest. Whether or not Abiy wins a majority, there's little indication the situation in Eritrea is about to change. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, London.
The Gambia's lawsuit against Myanmar at the International Court of Justice over treatment of Rohingya Muslims opens in The Hague today. The West African country filed the suit last month, accusing Myanmar of carrying out genocide against ethnic Rohingya Muslims. The Gambia's case will be opened by its Justice Minister, Abubakar Tambadou, who arrived in The Hague over the weekend. From Banjul, Sharif Bojong Jr. reports.
In its submission, the Gambia accused Myanmar of committing genocidal acts against Rohingya Muslims. It said the acts happened during operations the Gambia alleges were intended to destroy the Rohingya as a group by the use of mass murder, rape, and other forms of sexual violence. It also accused Myanmar of systematically destroying villages in Rohingya communities by fire, often with inhabitants trapped inside burning houses. On his way to The Hague Friday evening, the Attorney General and Minister Abubakar Tambedu told VOA that the Gambia lodged the lawsuit to advance the cause of justice for the Rohingya Muslims.
It is about time that the world, or the conscience of the world, is awakened, that the voice of the international community is heard on the treatment of the Rohingya by the authorities in Myanmar. What is going on in Rakhine State against the Rohingya is despicable. They are horrible, terrible atrocities, and the world must hold Myanmar accountable for these actions.
Though the Gambia has been hailed internationally for its decision to sue Myanmar, critics at home question the logic of the lawsuit, often citing the country's small size. But Tambedu says what matters is Gambia's international obligation.
International law treats all sovereign nations, big or small, with equality. The Gambia has an obligation under the Genocide Convention, just like any other state. We are only responsible for our obligations under the convention and not the obligation of others. And so if we feel that our rights are not being respected under the Genocide Convention as a contracting state party, then we have a responsibility to bring this to the attention of the International Court of Justice, which is the guardian of the Genocide Convention.
The case at the UN's highest court is expected to attract huge international attention, especially with Nobel Peace Prize winner Aung San Suu Kyi appearing in defense of Myanmar. But Tambedu says he is unfazed by her appearance.
It's an opportunity for Myanmar to show that it is a responsible member of the international community and that it believes in the international rule of law and that it will abide by any decision that the ICJ will make in this matter.
In August of 2017, a group of alleged Rohingya militants attacked several police posts in Myanmar's Rakhine State. The country's military responded with major operations in Rohingya villages. Hundreds of known combatants are thought to have died in those operations. Within months, hundreds of thousands of Rohingya had fled their homes, with many of them crossing the border to Bangladesh. The Rohingya are largely Muslim ethnic group. They are thought to have lived in what is now Myanmar for about 600 years. However, Myanmar, a predominantly Buddhist nation, has denied them citizenship since the 1980s and says most are immigrants from Bangladesh. The Gambia's legal process is financed by the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC. It will be represented by a team of local lawyers in collaboration with an American law firm, Foley Hogg. Reporting for VOA, I'm Sherif Bojang Jr. in Banjul.
Experts warn that South Africa's state-owned enterprises are in trouble, which could put the national economy in peril too. Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula dismissed the board of the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa yesterday and put it under business administration. South African Airways and power utility Eskom have recently shown signs of dire distress. As Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, both the government and citizens are worried enough that President Cyril Ramaphosa cut short his state visit to Egypt today so he could return home to deal with the Eskom crisis.
Yesterday, Eskom plunged the country into darkness after operational challenges forced it to take 6,000 megawatts off the national grid. Over the past few weeks, it has failed to deliver enough electricity, resulting in power cuts lasting as much as 8 hours at a time in some places. Platinum and gold mines in the country have been forced to halt operations, leading to a fall in the rand. Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan says the government is working around the clock to find a solution.
That's why we are here, to A, apologize to the country, to admit that we have problems that we have to actually deal with, and not shy about actually admitting them. So I'm, on behalf of government, I'm really sorry that we find ourselves in this position.
40 out of every 100 trains aren't leaving or arriving on time. Millions of dollars spent on trains that were found ill-suited to the country's railway systems, and irregular financial conduct are some of the ills that have plagued the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa, PRASA, over the years. Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula said putting the rail agency under administration, placing full control in the hands of one administrator, was the only way to save it. Ayanda Alipain is the spokesperson for Mbalula.
An administrator, in essence, is a group CEO and a board in one that cuts bureaucracy, that cuts the red tape, and it means that this administrator will be able to execute and make decisions and implement things at the speed of light, almost. We need a new broom that will sweep clean. Thereafter, a permanent board can be placed. We can also have a permanent group CEO.
The Auditor General had already flagged PRASA as a top offender in irregular expenditure that amounted to over $1.5 billion in the 2017-2018 financial year. Bongisizwe Mpondo, the appointed administrator, has been given 12 months to stabilize the company, review its organizational design and business model, and ensure that those found guilty of mismanagement are brought to book. Recently, the government placed South African Airways SAA under Business Rescue 2 after it struggled to meet its monthly financial obligations and dealt with a crippling strike. The SAA business rescue practitioner has been tasked with restructuring and reviving the airline. However, Tokelo Muloi, a business rescue specialist, says an initial assessment is needed to ascertain if the company can be saved.
There are two objectives that must be achieved. One is to turn around SAA to continue as the same business. Alternatively, is to sell it to another entity who will then allow enough money to come in to settle creditors than to go into liquidation.
Kaya Sitole, a chartered accountant, says the solution to challenges faced with state-owned enterprises should start with fixing accountability and governance problems.
Unfortunately, when the enterprises are not in a position to submit financial statements, when they're unable to satisfy the Auditor General's requirements for just, you know, a simple audit, then it means that either the government is no longer capable, or perhaps the people that it has put there are not up to the task.
Corruption has been listed as the top reason why most parastatals are failing. However, there is no agreement amongst key stakeholders on whether the government should privatize them or keep on giving them financial bailouts with the hope that one day they will come all right. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed received the Nobel Peace Prize today. The Gambia's lawsuit against Myanmar regarding Rohingya Muslims opens today at the International Court of Justice in The Hague. And experts warn that South Africa's state-owned enterprises are in trouble, which could put the national economy in peril. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Two former prime ministers were handed long sentences for corruption today, as were several other officials and automotive businessmen in what prosecutors called an effort to support former Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's pursuit of a fifth term in office. Bouteflika quit under pressure in April amid mass protests that have been held every Friday since then. The protest movement want the old guard to be prevented from running in Algeria's Thursday's presidential election, but the ruling elite dominate the ballot. The transitional government has rejected calls for the election to be cancelled. Ahmed Ouhaya, who was prime minister four times, was given a 15-year jail sentence, and Abdelmalik Salal, who was twice premier, was jailed for 12 years. They denied all charges. The court in Algiers also handed 10-year prison terms to two former industry ministers who were ordered to spend 10 years in jail, and sentences ranging from 3 to 7 years were given to five prominent businessmen. In a discussion about Africa's development over the next 60 years, leaders emphasized that the continent needs to improve intra-trade to shift underground wealth into people's real lives. Most Africans say the economic borders reduce opportunities on the continent despite sufficient resources. Ugenwe Mana has the details.
The African Union says intra-Africa trade stands at 16%, while trade with Europe is at 65%. Some Africans say this keeps Africans, especially farmers, working for others. Rutina Samuel is from Kenya.
I have been brought up in an area where coffee is the major cash crop. A farmer is paid 0.5 USD per kg. This coffee is exported. Then, after a while, I go to the supermarket and I buy this coffee, 200 grams, at $3. Does it make sense?
Borderless Africa is described as the source of opportunities in the continent, opportunities which will retain youths, some of whom die while struggling to go overseas for better lives.
The thing is, bottom line is that Africa must raise productivity, Africa must create employment, Africa must get stuff for the youth to do if we are going to prevent them from going up north.
To increase opportunities, Africa needs to ease the free movement of people on the continent. Critics say it is harder to travel from one country to another than going overseas. According to Rwanda's experience, Claire Kamanzi, the chief executive officer of Rwanda Development Board, says countries should not find excuses for not opening their skies.
When it comes to visas, our policy initially was just Africa. You know, anyone from Africa could travel to Rwanda and get visa on arrival. About half of the African countries don't need visas, but those who need get them on arrival. And it hasn't had any negative impact for us as a country. So there's really no reason to fear, you know, being as open as we've tried to be as a country. So you need evidence that those fears are really not founded. I think Rwanda is a country to look at.
Raila Odinga, the Africa Union High Representative for Infrastructure Development, says Africa needs time to adopt this mindset and boost transcontinental infrastructure so that in 6 years, Africa will have the economic legacy it lacked for so long.
And here we have not only the five-speed railway that you're talking about, but of course the continental highways, the waterways, and then you're talking about the open skies, the air transport in the continent. Right now we have about 9 trans-African highways that have been identified for development.
According to UNECA, United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, the continent loses $135 billion annually because of poor intracontinental trade. African leaders are hoping that the African Continental Free Trade Area, signed in March last year, will bridge the gap. It is expected to boost intra-trade to 60% by 2022. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Every December, the world stops to remember the fight against HIV/AIDS. and those killed by the virus. At a recent event to remember Ugandan singer Philly Bongole Lutaya, the first prominent Ugandan to publicly declare his HIV status, activists and health officials say musicians have a bigger role to play in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Reporter Mugume Davis Karua Karinji files this report from Kampala.
Children sing Phil Lutaya's songs in Kampala in a commemoration of his contribution toward the fight against HIV/AIDS in Uganda. In the song alone, the foreign singer calls for everyone to join the fight against the disease, saying today it could be him, but tomorrow it could be someone else who contracts the virus. Lutaya, a popular Ugandan musician, toured the country talking about HIV and made tremendous contribution in fighting the stigma associated with the disease. He died of AIDS in 1989 before powerful antiretroviral drugs were developed to save the lives of millions of people with HIV. Alex Mukulu is a Ugandan playwriter and theater director. He says his friend Lutaya taught him about the disease. He says Ugandan artists should emulate the foreign singer.
When I was growing up, we are listening to people like the doctor, the teacher, the reverend or priest, and who else? Policeman. Today, who do the young people listen to and believe in what he says?
But he says artists and especially musicians are not doing enough. HIV activist and artist Moses Supercharger agrees.
He opened our eyes, taught us lessons against stigma, and actually brought the government started realizing that there was a problem and the services. We began with counseling services because we didn't have any treatment.
Supercharger has been living with HIV for more than 20 years and says adhering to treatment has kept him moving. Dr. Dennis Tindiewa, a pediatrician in Kampala, says Lutaya's message helped him and other doctors in treating HIV/AIDS patients. He says Lutaya's self-acceptance is one way to fight both the spread of the disease and stigma among communities.
Once you have accepted the condition, that internal stigma decreases, and then you can share your stories with your either peers or your members of the community, and that helps you get to know what is available in terms of treatment, in terms of support.
Ruth Achieng is Uganda's Minister of Health. She says although there has been a significant reduction in both HIV infections and death, people should not be complacent.
When we walk through the memory lanes and see those pictures, for us it is clear testimony of what we saw at that time compared to what is now. And unfortunately, the majority of our population, which is 75%, did have opportunity to experience what was there at that time, and therefore do not understand what we are talking about.
At least 1,000 people are infected with HIV every week in Uganda, and there are also 500 HIV-related deaths every week. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, 2019 has been the year of Ghanaians in the diaspora returning to their roots in their West African homeland. The year of return on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.